Hello.
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 I'm so loud.
Hello.
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 Hello. Do I keep that in the episode? I don't know.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome. Hello and welcome to Board Stupid, the podcast that loves talking tabletop board games, D&D and other awesome stuff. I'm Wayne.
I'm Simon.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Tom.
We're just nerds talking about the things we love that are worth geeking out over. So, Simon, are you ready?
It's 2023. I'm as ready as I can be.
Oh, God, why is it 2023? Tom, are you ready?
It's 2023.
Yeah, and we're like...
We're not halfway in, Tom.
Yeah, halfway into January a bit.
I thought you were going to say we're halfway into 2023.
Yeah. We're going to Birmingham next week. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Are you ready, though, Tom?
Yes.
I can't continue unless you follow the script. I'm sorry, I'll get stuck.
Yeah.
I'm in a loop.
Follow the checklist.
Follow the checklist. Good. I'm ready. If you guys are ready...
I am not a robot.
I am not... Let me check the box. I am not a robot. But I might be a wolf. And if you guys are ready, let's dive in to this week's episode. This week, we played The Wolves. We Played is a series where we talk about an epic board game that we played this week. And this week is the terrain-flipping, den-building, pack-growing, territory-control game, The Wolves. In this episode, we're diving into the things we liked and breaking down everything that makes it great. Because at the end of the day, we only play awesome games. And in The Wolves, it's survival of the fittest.
Oh, woo.
It's kind of a weak howl.
The smallest howl.
It's a small howl. Okay, puppy howl. Mm-hmm. Frank howl.
I'm working up.
Okay, yeah, work it up. Yeah, not an alpha. The Wolves is a pack-building strategy game for 2 to 5 players. It's survival of the fittest as you compete to build the largest, most dominant pack by claiming territory, recruiting lone wolves, and hunting prey. But be careful not to expand too recklessly into terrain where your rivals thrive. They may lure members of your pack away. The Wolves will play 2 to 5 players, designed by Ashwin Kamath and Clarence Simpson, with the art by Paulina Linyama. I'm so sorry if that's not how I say it. Sorry, Paulina. And is published by what appears to be some of our favourite publishers, Pandasaurus Games.
Yeah.
It's another one.
I'm growing a collection, what can I say?
Yeah, that's right. Are you paid?
Bankrolling them.
Are you paid by Pandasaurus? Are you a shill for Big Panda?
I wish.
Big Panda's got its fingers in everyone these days.
I would push all of their dinosaur games if I had... some kind of remuneration or otherwise, apparently, because damn, they're good.
Why is the logo a dinosaur when it's a Pandasaurus Games? Does it have panda colouring? I can't really tell from here.
It's green and orange, Tom. Pandas are notoriously black and white.
Yeah. That's why I was confused.
I'll get back to you.
Yeah. Well, the Wolves plays in 75 minutes, no more, no less, apparently.
Exactly 75 minutes.
Is that what it says in the box?
That's what it says on BGG.
On BGG. No more.
What does it say on the box, Simon?
No less.
Yeah, 75
minutes. There you go.
I'd say that's about right.
Yeah, all right.
But you're not allowed out until the mark.
Is that accurate? That feels right. Just over an hour.
Yeah,
that feels about
as
right.
As I'm sure we'll get to, that will vary depending on how you want to play your game, right?
Yeah. But feels relatively accurate.
I think that's about right.
Yeah. MSRP is $49.99, but you can probably pick it up for 40 quid from retail stores.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Zatu and the like have already got it for 40 quid.
That's not bad. We'll get into that. Let's start, as we always do, and dig into the components and art design. Where do we begin? Well, there is a game region board, right, which is kind of hex tiles.
Yeah, there's 10 terrain tiles or region boards, which you'll use a varying number of, depending on your player count.
Yep.
Each of those has 16 individual territory hexes within them. So you're playing on a pretty large area, as I say, it will vary depending on players. So everything stays relatively tight for your player count. I mean, it goes without saying that I was immediately drawn to the aesthetics of this when I first saw that box art of the eye.
Yeah, it's like a giant wolf's eye in immense Pandasaurus pastel colours.
The cover is very, it's sort of very early 2000s Disney films. I'm sure I've seen this film. That is the cover of a DVD somewhere, I'm sure.
I'm not a Disney fan, but I guess I can see what you're going for with
it
that.
It does. Do you know what? You said it. I can see that as like a full-length movie poster.
Yeah.
Right, just the eye and the title.
It looks like a movie
and,
poster.
And if you look at the art, there's like two wolves sort of staring each other down from sort
in
of
the eyeball.
In the reflection of the eye. Yeah, yeah.
That's freaking cool, isn't it?
It's
the artwork.
It's a clever design and it is so eye-catching.
Do you want to just quickly talk about the aesthetics generally before we get into the components then? Because it is typically marvellous and in the Pandasaurus pastel, which I'll just call it that. That's what I'm calling
yeah,
it.
It shares a lot of art design theme, right? There's a lot of similarity between many of the Pandasaurus games in terms of the art direction that they go for.
Yeah, and this wonderful hue of... It's not the Dinosaur Island neon. It is that pastel shade set. So
it's a little bit less offensive to the eyes. Yeah.
I think they quickly moved away from that. I know we mentioned it on a couple of Pandasaurus games, like Brew and the like. It feels like Dinosaur Island is the only one where they went full on neon.
I suppose that is true.
And then I think they must have got a new creative director in that went, actually, maybe that's a bit much.
I think it was just so impactful that it forever sticks in my head.
It is.
Yeah, I suppose almost like, again, a commonly mentioned one here, Scythe, it's got that slightly muted tone. So instead of your...
Yes.
What I'd say the typical, you know, you pick up a board game and it's got red, yellow, green, blue as your player characters. This is a nice dusky purple, green, brown...
Pinks and yellows.
Kind of mustard and blue.
That's right, yeah.
I like how you went for mustard and not piss yellow, which was... The designation when we last played it.
I must have missed that, thankfully. It's actually very...
Karen was slightly perturbed by giving the piss yellow wall.
I think it's a very nice...
It is more of a must. It's a Coleman's colour.
Yeah, very nice yellow, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, very nice indeed.
Solid design throughout, I think. The aesthetic looks great from my perspective. It creates a nice little landscape. Cascadia, again, you guys will know, anyone who's listened before, is another game that I love.
Yeah,
similar kind of terrain outlook when you get the board out. You've got lots of mountains, rivers, forests and fields.
Yeah, there's something about this that really appeals to me. Obviously, it looks great, but I something that we noticed and we talked about when we played it last time is the way all the tiles are laid out symmetrically, right?
Mm.
They all have each of the five terrains on them.
Yep.
One terrain in the middle, and then the other four terrains arrayed around them. And the size and shape of each of the types of terrains is always the same on every tile.
Set up very well in terms of balance.
Yeah,
mathematically
although the layout of the tiles will be randomized and you may end up with certain terrain types sort of ending up being contiguous between tiles, it's quite clever how you are basically balancing the terrains, right?
Yeah.
To sort of, I guess, make it less likely that you end up with sort of a huge blob of mountains.
Yes, and even if you did, the way the game works, and we'll get onto the scoring mechanic in a little while, it'll never particularly matter, I don't think, if there is a vast number of, say, Rocky Mountains all in
one sort of
grouping, because they're going to be on different tiles anyway.
You sort of want
a variety.
Because of the way the mechanisms of the game work with sort of cycling through terrain types.
So, yeah, the board is kind of hex-based, kind of region-based. Each of the, I suppose, hex segments has a number of terrain types on it, as we talked about. You then get player boards, which are double-sided for different player counts.
Yep.
And you have each wolf that is a specialist, I guess, or that has a native terrain. So you've got like a forest wolf, for example.
It doesn't really make any huge mechanical difference.
It
the only
adds
difference...
the lightest, gentlest egg wash of asymmetry.
Each type of wolves specialise in one of the five terrain types.
Yeah.
Right? So you'll have your forest wolves or your tundra wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, the boards are identical. They're just coloured for the terrain type and the type of wolf that you've picked.
It's a shame that they're not double thickness or recessed. Or at least with the punch-outs we talked about before.
If you don't
have the double thickness, then punch-outs...
Because it's double-sided, I think recessed would be harder.
Right.
A hole through as a complete punch-out, perhaps.
Oh, but even you couldn't do that, I guess, because there's upgrade things.
The alignment would go a bit wonky. And yes, there's because you remove things from the surface to reveal...
It would need to be triple thickness, which would be
normally
expensive.
It would be an overproduction, I think, absolutely.
Well, or the board would have to be the same for all players.
I'm just spoiled. That's my problem. Yeah. That's my problem. You get a little scoring board, the moonlight board, or the calendar track, I guess I call it.
Yeah, it's sort of a mix of scoring and countdown.
It looks like a calendar.
Yeah, I mean, it is a calendar.
Literally a lunar calendar.
With the scoring phases of the game being phases of the moon.
What I do like about this game is it comes with wooden bits as opposed to plastic bits.
Yeah.
Which I was just going to say, there's no plastic, other than bags to store them in, no plastic in here.
Which is just bloody wonderful. Let me just keep reiterating. And you get these great little wolf meeples.
Yeah, two types of sculpts, the alphas and the pack wolves, of which there are a ton more. Then you've got your dens in your five-player colours and your layers, which are the upgraded versions.
Yes.
Fairly simple in design overall, but they do their job perfectly well. They are easy to spot on the board once you've played them. The colours stand out and you can tell a den from a layer at a glance.
They're simple but striking. I mean, it's nice. Yeah.
Considering how many sort of different terrain types and colours and pieces and things end up on the board towards the end of the game, I never felt like it was difficult to keep track of stuff.
As opposed to something
right,
like
they're particularly
Hamlet.
Good.
Hamlet, what I always found was wildly... It looked great, but I found it increasingly hard to read the board state.
It gets busy.
The wolves, I think, you can glance at it and go, oh, well, Nick's in charge there. Karen's got a good hold on that
sector. I think
that's
probably down to the fact that ultimately the sort of the tracking and the scoring mechanisms are resolved quite simply.
It's quite clean.
Yes.
Yeah. You only, at best, really, you only need to be able to sort of count the pieces.
Yeah.
Because most of them don't really make any difference.
Indeed.
Each player will also have a set of terrain tiles. And this is it five or six?
Six.
Six as a player.
That's right. A set of six tiles as a player. And these are just individual, small, I don't know, 10 centimetre long.
They're sort of, they're almost like mini Euro card size, but they're thick cardboard.
Thick card, double-sided.
Key fob size, I want to say.
Yeah, key fob size. And they represent a terrain on each side. So you might have grass on one side and then rocky mountain on the other side, for example.
So the one that you'll get for your wolf type is always your terrain type on both sides to represent how you favour that terrain type.
But must still be flipped.
It
doesn't matter. Always flip
and then, it. Yeah, and then the others are basically an identical set of five double-sided tiles with different terrain types on each side.
Absolutely. You then get a heap of tokens with it. The tokens include some region scoring tokens, some little prey tiles like bison or
rabbits,
caribou,
moose, all sorts of stuff.
That sort
wild
of stuff.
Boar. Raccoon,
wild boar, all that sort of
raccoon. The raccoon's an interesting
interesting prey for a wolf.
I guess it's likely to be accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bonus actions and sort of wild terrain. There's like a bunch of different tokens, and they're nice thick cardboard. Nothing really to complain about there. It's just good, solid stuff.
I think it's solid punchboard token.
Solid punchboard stuff. Yeah.
Nothing outstanding. Definitely not a drawback.
No, you get some player aids, which would be great because I think that they do distill the rules down quite well. Except there's a couple of errors in the rules implementation on the player aid compared to the rulebook.
Yeah. They were, unfortunately. I hadn't particularly spotted them, but you'd checked ahead of time and found that. But.
Yeah, it's acknowledged by Pandasaurus. It's a first print run thing. So if your copy, when you listen to this, is 1 year in the future, you probably don't have that problem. But it's one minor thing. Other than that, good to have player rates.
We're not
going to
tell you what it is.
No. Generally, then, how would you rate the production of the wolves?
I think I wouldn't hesitate to give this a 4 out of 5.
It's a wonderful production, yeah. At £40.
So particularly for the cost, yeah.
What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I think I agree. There's a couple of things that could push it to a 5, but I think we're probably into the realm of being spoiled with double thickness punch boards and stuff like that. And there is
screen printed walls and stuff like
that. From a practicality point of view, they're not really necessary.
Yeah, this is an easy 4. The game gives you everything that you need in actually a really lovely production.
Yeah, that's the thing. It balances the aesthetic with the functionality, and I think it does that as well as it needs to.
Well, yeah, absolutely it does. Well, let's dive into the core mechanics of the game. Who won the last one? Was it you, Tom, or was it you, Simon? It was you by a point or two.
2 points.
Took the last one by two points, yeah.
How do you win the Wolves?
I thought I had it, yeah.
Because I don't know. I lose this all the time. Help me.
Okay. How do you win? Whatever Wayne is doing, don't do that.
Don't do Wayne stuff. Mm.
So as we said at the top, there's a bunch of different regional tiles which get laid out, randomised at the start of the game, depending on player count. Upon each of these, so you're playing with somewhere between 6 and 10 sectors, you'll randomly place a scoring token, which is either a crescent moon, a half moon, or a full moon. Mm-hmm. That'll denote the first set of scoring, the second set of scoring, and the third. And they are randomly placed on one of each of these sectors.
It's interesting. It's sort of like cycling King of the Hill, right?
Yes.
You have to chase certain territories to score at certain stages of the game. And then they become useless afterwards.
Near enough. So you basically want to have the most territory control in the next territory which is going to score.
Mm. At the right time.
At the right time, yeah. There's at least two of each. So there's at least two crescent moons in play. So you can. Yeah. It's not a bun fight for the one. It's, oh, I'm going to go for this one while they chase this one down in the other corner.
Yeah.
Thinking, we've not played this at two player at all yet.
We've played it at 3 and 5.
I might need to double check on the two player whether there's fewer of those, because if you're never competing, so there must be a point where you have to compete for at least one territory.
So I mentioned this to Wayne earlier, but on BGG it's rated best at 2.
Really?
Mm. Which
interesting.
I think it's the only player account we haven't tried.
Yeah, I've not.
Yeah. I think we did do 4.
I've not even looked at the rules for a two-player count, so I'm now instantly curious as to what that differential is, and I'm not going to sit here and flick through the rule book as we talk. you're looking to get... So let's say there's two crescent moon territories that are on the board to start with. You'll want to get to score any points from those, either the most or the second most control of those areas by moving in your wolf packs.
It's basically just having as many pieces as possible in that tile.
Yeah, so your wolf pack, either alpha or general pack wolves, building dens, which count as a point each, or if you can upgrade those to layers by getting them next to the scoring token, the water area, then there'll be 3 points of control.
And interestingly, is the only thing that's worth more than 1 point,
which
is what I mentioned before, where you can almost glance at the board state and say, okay, it's just the number of pieces is the score. The only outlier is the layers to remember, and there's not really very many that get built.
Makes that nice and clean. Absolutely.
Easy.
Crucial thing, of course.
Yeah.
You can go all in on scoring on that crescent moon.
Yeah.
But that'll mean that the half moon, which is the next scoring round, you won't have focused on.
Mm. So or the full moon at the end of game, yeah.
So it's not just a case of all in on every territory. It's getting enough control or thinking you're going to be well in,
not over committing too much, right?
And then because it's randomised, it might be that the next territory which will score, the half moon, is just next door, so you can easily run your wolves in and get some control there. It might be that it's entirely the other side of the rift on the board and you've got to somehow circumnavigate halfway around it, and that for me is one of the key things of this game, you can sort of
give up certain scoring that you know you won't be able to go for to cement your position for a later scoring round.
Yes,
because the final scoring round in particular is worth considerably more than the first score.
The late game rounds are double the first game round, so it's 4 points for gaining the most control in the crescent moons.
Four, then six, then eight.
That's it.
Yeah, right?
And half of that for each second place in control.
You can get points a bunch of different other ways as well.
If you're not interested in the territory control, there's a whole bunch of upgrade stuff you can do.
Yeah,
right?
The player board is basically a point salad. Upgrade board, sort of, right? Your wolves start off fairly basic in terms of what they can do, but as you build dens or layers or capture prey or deploy more wolves, obviously you get increased abilities for the wolves and how you sort of use your pieces, but past certain points on each of those upgrade tracks, there's also points to be scored there.
Yeah, right? So you can make your wolves faster, and then after a point, you make them faster and you get yourself some victory points, which mm-hmm. is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, yeah, there's hunting. So should we discuss some of the main actions in the game then?
Yeah, let's drive through what a turn might look like. Typically, you're going to be doing two things on your turn, with exceptions, which we'll get to.
Mm-hmm. You must do two things.
In fact, you must do two things on your turn, with exceptions, which we'll get to. And a basic one that you're probably going to be doing a lot, which is moving, especially if you want to control those territories. So how does moving work in the Wolves? So how does anything work in the Wolves?
So, and this is the main mechanism of the game, right? This game is a really tight, quite confusing initially, action economy game, where you're given this set of tiles that show all of the terrain types. And in order to take an action, you have to flip a terrain tile of the matching type that corresponds with the place that you want to take an action. That is to say, if you want to move to a forest or move to a grassland, you have to flip a tile that currently shows forest or grassland. And then it'll show something else on the other side.
It's simple and confusing at the same time because there's depth in it. That depth being... Yeah. Some of the actions require more than one tile of the same type.
Yeah, so movement is straightforward. You flip one tile, and most of the time you'll have whatever tile you need available, so you don't need to worry about any complexity. But then you have a series of actions that cost two tiles or three tiles.
Which is almost everything else, right?
And they have to match. So if you wanted to do...
build a den.
If you wanted to build a den, you have to flip two tiles of the right type to build a den in that terrain type, which is relatively straightforward if you've got two of that terrain type available to you. But if you don't, you might have to plan your turn accordingly.
Or you might be in the middle of the bloody tundra and you don't have those terrains.
Aside from not necessarily being able to take the action in the right place, you might have to sequence your turn, right? You take two actions, so you could flip a tile that shows a terrain type to move first, and then that terrain tile has been flipped to, let's say, tundra, and you've already got another matching tundra, so you can then flip two tundras to do a two-tile action, like building a den, or upgrading to a lair, or trying to capture a lone wolf.
It's super clever because it means you're never relying on the roll of a dice or the pull of a card or just this is the one thing you can do. There's options out there. You just need to make sure that you've set it up in a way that you can do it. And it makes for such a clever games play that it's never just a case of I'm going to move there and do a thing. I need to make sure that of the options I've got, I take the right one at the right time. Without it being overly complicated either. I don't think anyone that we've played with so far has sat there.
I think you can explain these rules pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But what takes time to digest, as I think both of you have inferred, is the whole sequencing aspect of it. As soon as you flip something, you might get yourself stuck in a little bit.
You might be stuck, not able to get the terrain type that you want to take the action that you would like to take. And that planning requires some thinking ends up basically meaning you waste part of your turn trying to do something inefficiently. And it's, I think it's the difference in that efficiency where the sort of, I guess, the more sort of...
It's the crunchiness, right?
Okay. Planning and crunchy-minded people will really enjoy this game.
Yeah, because it can be crunchy, absolutely.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
We talked a little bit about upgrading your wolf pack. And, you know, you can maybe make your wolves faster, right? So they can move more hexes every time you move. Because when you can move, you can only move a certain amount of hexes. But you can improve that over the game. And when you move, you can only really move a couple of wolves that you have control of. But you can improve that over the game. Yeah. So you can move more wolves.
So you start with being able to move two wolves up to three spaces each.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. But, the aforementioned two-tile actions. So when you build dens... The dens come off your upgrade board and they multifunction upgrade tracks then show an upgrade. So you might be able to move more wolves or move your wolves further or take longer range howl actions.
Which is a whole other separate thing which we'll get to. But that's just a nice way of creating...
It's a bit of engine building in there, right?
Yeah, and slowly diverging asymmetry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a double... double rewarding action, which will then increase an attribute and get you territory control.
And potentially victory points.
And, then
and
victory
potentially
points.
Bonus tiles that you might then use to sort of
do other stuff with.
Combo into other things.
Yeah, so the den building is great. That's how you upgrade your wolf pack. Part of those other actions that you can do, so we talked about moving, we talked about building dens. You can howl, because wolves howl.
Oh, woo! Oh, woo.
Sorry. but there are lone wolves on the map, which are basically little cardboard tiles, little tokens.
Yep.
And you can collect those, essentially, and turn them into your own wolves by howling at them.
Yeah, yep. Get within range and you spot or scent on the wind that there's lone wolves out there that can be part of your pack. So you take a two-tile action, so they're sitting in the desert, you've got two desert-facing tiles, you flip them both over, you howl at the token within range. That comes off and goes on the moonlight tracking board.
We'll cover that.
And then you replace it with one of the wolves from your player board. Again, they will give you victory points as they come into play. The more you reveal, the more victory points you'll gain. You'll also, at various stages, gain more alpha wolves who have slightly more powerful abilities. You can build your dens and lairs next to those.
They're like the builders, and they're also the sort of the impervious pieces.
They
right?
are yeah. protected as the lone piece, whereas anything else on the board is susceptible to the domination, which we'll get to.
Well, let's cover that now. So if you've got a lonely pack wolf who's not protected by anything,
or a den that's on its own,
or a den by itself, they are at risk of being dominated by your opponent.
Yeah. Another wolf comes in and pisses on your house.
So exactly.
Is one of those cool, slightly forethought-required actions where, and it happened in our most recent game, you can howl at a wolf on your first or second turn. You can do anything in any order. Mm-hmm. The risk being, if that howl at a lone wolf puts one of your pack wolves onto the board and that's your last turn, that pack wolf is then sat on its own, and he is vulnerable to being dominated.
Susceptible to being dominated.
Yeah.
And difficult to do at the very beginning of the game, but
entirely
it does
possible.
Happen.
As
it does
we've seen,
happen.
Yeah.
It does happen.
So to do a dominate action, you need to have three matching terrain tiles. So.
It's the only thing that requires three matching terrain.
And by default, the only way you're going to be able to do that is by doing it on your terrain type. So if you're playing as the desert wolves, you're going to have one of your own that's always desert, and then two of your other terrain tiles are also going to have the possibility of having a desert side up.
The only way you can make a combo of three.
You need to sort of program your turn in such a way where you've got those two desert facing up, and then with your own home base sort of desert tile, you can then activate the domination, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah, And if you do take that domination, you will remove that pack wolf from the board. Again, it goes on the moonlight tracking. We'll get to that scoring very soon. You'll then place one of your own wolves down. It might be a pack wolf of your own, so it might be equally vulnerable to being dominated back by the opposing player.
Yeah,
but every time a piece is dominated, it is removed from the board.
So removed from the game.
Yeah,
oh, indeed.
Yeah, the game. So their pack becomes weaker and yours becomes stronger.
It's a swing rather than just you adding
your piece onto
the board. You're adding a piece and someone else is losing a piece.
And it's the same with dens, which is super useful as well. It's another way of getting your dens out. You can dominate other people's dens, which is amazing. Building dens and doing some of the other actions on the board, like hunting, will get you little bonus tokens.
Yep.
Should we quickly talk about the bonus tokens?
Yeah.
And the things that you can get to help you through the game.
We've sort of talked a little bit about the planning economy sort of reward, right? If you can plan your two actions effectively with your tiles, then you can do quite a lot of good things with those. But there are two types of extra bonus tiles that you can get. There's one that gives you bonus actions,
which is insanely powerful.
So
by
you
the
can
way.
Take a third action on your turn, or a fourth if you've got enough.
It always feels so nefarious. Like, I've done this and this. Oh, and now I'm going to do this as well.
Combo
it,
into doing something else. And I'm going to keep extending my turn to catch people off guard and do three things or four things, depending on how well you manage to sort of chain together. And then, in addition, you can also get bonus territory tiles.
Wild terrain tokens.
Yeah, which is spent to be any type of terrain flip, which means dominations
becomes way easier,
become
then, right?
much more dangerous and risky.
Yeah.
And if someone's sitting on one of those little wild tokens, everyone's watching them because they are now much more capable of stealing your pieces.
From anywhere, because it's a wild...
Basically, yeah. anywhere yeah. you go, rather than just being on their particular home territory.
They're really cool.
I've found it something I've used almost immediately upon picking them up.
yeah, yeah,
unlike
yeah.
the classic, you know, D&D potion. Like,
sit on
magic
for
item,
the
I must keep this till the end of the campaign.
Yeah, like, I was at Final Fantasy elixirs. You yeah, never yeah, use yeah. them. But no, these, you tend to want to yeah. use.
Oh, I've got a terrain tile I can use at random. Sure, that's happening right yeah. now.
I've got an extra action. I kind of want to do that.
It always feels like the best opportunity. I'm never sat there thinking, oh, I'm not sure if this is the best point. I'm like, yes, this will always be beneficial.
I could use this.
100%.
And I'll tell you what, the extra action's super useful, especially if you want to get something in before the calendar reaches its point. And that's where we'll cover this.
Or you force
the calendar to force scoring. So as we talked about, as you're removing pieces from the board, either through domination or through howling at lone wolves.
Grabbing the lone wolves, yeah.
Or whatever.
Or removing dens or
replacing
wolves.
Dens with lairs yeah. or whatever yeah. it is.
Or upgrading.
Exactly. Those pieces are going to go onto this calendar track. And the calendar track will have upon it certain thresholds upon which you'll start to check for scoring. Which means that the game is a variable length, which is very interesting, and it also is another tactical consideration.
Yeah, it's more like variable speed, right?
That's right, variable yeah. speed.
Depending on how effectively people are dominating each other's pieces or grabbing the lone wolves
or building
or doing
stuff
upgrades,
or taking, yeah.
the speed at which the calendar moves will go faster. And when you hit those scoring moments, that's when you check to see who's in control of the right zones. So that's where it comes back to what we said right at the beginning, where basically you need to be in the right territory at the right time when the yeah. scoring happens. Because before it...
Doesn't matter.
It's not helpful, and after it, it's not helpful even less helpful.
yeah, I was just looking here at the 2-3 player board, and each player count will have scoring triggered at a slightly different
yep.
date. I was going to say dates, it's a calendar. So in a three-player game, once the ninth piece has been put on the scoring track, you'll score the crescent moon. Once the 17th piece has been put on, you'll score the half moons. And then just five pieces later at 22, you'll be scoring the full moons.
Mm.
So if you have two players put five tokens down between them, which is totally possible.
Oh, 100%.
That's a round. That's one round
that's
between
a round,
the
yeah.
scoring.
Then
yeah. That's a couple of dens and a howl.
You can force the end of the game super yeah. quick. So you might block people out of being able to move into the territory they need
yeah.
to.
They don't get there in time, or they haven't had an opportunity to upgrade a den to a lair to, you know, swing the territory control scoring. So these things happen very, very quickly. I think when we play with five players, You could sort of see the scoring coming, but there's nothing you can do about
no.
it because you've got to wait for four other players to take their turn before you can do anything
about it.
It's
going to end well before it gets to you. It happened to me twice. I was like, maybe I'll get to do my thing. Oh no, there's another six pieces on the board. There's
yeah,
no chance.
It's kind of definitely at points a game of one more turn.
Yeah.
But then
yeah,
if everyone has one more turn.
It just never ends, right? Everyone wants to do their thing. But those are some of the actions that you can do. That's all of the actions you
yeah.
can do, right?
I like that as a mechanic. There's not many games I've played that have that, where it's, no, this is the end.
Yeah.
Normally
yeah.
it's, oh, it's the last round, so everyone gets one more turn.
What
or,
I was thinking...
Similar.
It's an uncertain yeah.
what was I thinking
length of time, right? I suppose. It's kind of an uncertain length of game.
Root triggers in a... differing but
yeah.
similar in that once the score point has been passed, that's
it's a race,
more,
right?
Yeah, it more often than not, you hit a certain point at the end of the game, and then everyone gets a turn. It's grace, right?
Yeah,
that's in loads of games. That's in Scythe. That's in Root. That's
Western
in
Legends.
Western Legends. Mm. Yeah, to name a few. But there's not many games that end immediately when someone hits that race point.
It's quite.
I think it's really clever, and because yeah. you can see it coming, you're literally yeah, yeah. watching the pieces fill up on the calendar. yeah. I
it's
think,
funny.
Oh, I love it.
It's very. I think it's great because you'll have some rounds where there'll be nothing put on there.
Yes, yeah,
people
we
moving
had a,
around and like, yeah, yeah. and then the next round will be bam 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 bam, and yeah,
there's always a bit
crazy.
Of a mad rush at the beginning of the game when lone wolf tokens are taken.
Lone
right?
wolves and people building dens to upgrade, right,
yeah.
to get their abilities up.
But yes, there's a bit of a lull between the initial sort of land grab to take lone wolves and then sort of the late game rush when everyone's trying to turn dens into layers and stealing people's stuff.
And then in the middle, it's like manoeuvring.
In the middle, there's a lot of manoeuvring and not a huge amount of new stuff being moved off the board.
So how would we rate the complexity, given all of that talk about the mechanisms? Because I've got some thoughts on this, but I'd like to hear what you guys think.
You want to go first?
It's yet another game where I'm struggling to rationalise between the simplicity of how you operate it. That isn't that hard.
The pieces, the scoring, the evaluation of board state is all really simple, which I think is really good because the action economy part of the game is much crunchier.
Yeah, the planning or pre-planning or setting up for your next couple of options is where it becomes more complex. I mean, it's not more than a three. Mm-hmm. I think maybe pushing towards a three, but that's the highest I'd put it.
I almost want to say this is almost like two polar opposites in one game, right? You have board state scoring and simple pieces that could probably be somewhere down near a one.
Yeah,
and then how'd
you play the game? Well, you move your pieces and you have the most control.
You move your pieces, you have more pieces.
Into these spaces.
Then,
how do I do it? Easy. Well, one will get you to a move, two will get you to build the den, three will let you dominate another player.
Have more stuff.
Okay, that's fine.
Have more stuff than the other one else. That's it. Nice and simple. Okay. Everything is 1 point except for layers.
The specifics of achieving that at the right time.
The economy and the timing aspect is up near a four. So, when you probably average it, it's somewhere between a two and a three, probably more towards a three.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably just under a three. I think it's exactly right because you're right. You can explain the rules. We have done to new players in 10 minutes.
Or less, I'd say.
It's really relatively straightforward. Mm. But as we've talked about...
Well, and then you get two rounds in and someone goes, oh, I can see what's on the other side of this tile because there's a little bit of artwork that tells me what's on the other side of this tile. Oh, I've been doing everything wrong. Yeah. I haven't planned anything.
that's a crucial little note, actually, if we hadn't made that clear. On the reverse side, as we say, there's a differing terrain type. In the corners of the face-up side, you can see what's on the back, so you absolutely can plan ahead.
So on the desert tile, there might be ice on the back, for example. But yeah, this is a easy to explain, easy to grasp game conceptually, but it has a high amount of crunch. And the crunch comes from the consideration of the pre-planning or the planning of your turn. Yeah. While everyone is having a go, I am doing the guy that's stuck in a math meme. All of the different equations appear around my head. Yeah.
What if I do this thing first, what are my tiles then going to be? And what can I
do
afterwards?
Second thing, and I've got this extra action tile, so could I then do that to get this? And I've got a spare terrain tile, so and the wild terrain might let me do this or this.
The interesting thing for me is that if you have those bonus tiles, it almost becomes easier to plan because you have more flexibility. When you have no bonus tiles, you're stuck with the core crunch. Yeah,
the crunch. It is decision crunch.
Yeah,
right. As opposed to weight crunch, I guess, or weight of option crunch.
Yeah.
Right, it's and the order of operations crunch. Right?
Yeah, I think it will be more suited to those who can more readily iterate their options in their head.
Yeah, if I flip this, it'll get me that, and it'll let me do this, and it'll get me that. You can read the board state because you can always see what terrain are available to you. It's all public information.
It's all like deterministic.
Everything is deterministic. Mm. There is no hidden info. You know what your tiles are available. You know what's on the other side of them. You know what order they're going to
go in. If you're really on top of things, you can look at what other people have and try and work out what they might be able to do.
Yep. Or at least look at the board state and look at the...
I was going to say, to be honest, for the most part, the only thing I've been trying to work out is if people are sitting on three of a type so that you don't get dominated. That's what you need to look out for.
Exactly. Mm. BGG rates this at 2.84, which I think is probably about bang on the money for a change. I think it's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Just a tickle under a three or a three.
We concur.
So let's talk about the Indian butter or I love butter and I love jiu-jitsu. Let's talk about theme gameplay interaction. Does the wolves feel thematic? And does the gameplay work together with the theme?
Now, I think some people I've heard say that it almost feels like a pasted-on theme.
It is a Euro game.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd agree that it's pasted-on. I think at times, and it will depend on your game and your gaming group, it feels pretty wolfy to me.
Yeah.
There's been games where I've felt like I've gone out on a run and I've spotted lone wolves and I've hunted them and then used those lone wolves to then go off and do a thing, and it felt really cool. There was a game that Wayne, you and I played with Ben, and I smashed him out of a territory by running my alphas in.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Full pelt. And because an alpha naturally dominates a pack wolf that's on their own,
they'll be pushed out.
They just run away.
They get pushed, yeah.
I get to choose where they go. I'm like, well, sorry, Ben, but your pack's leaving this terrain, and it's a full-on swing. And that feels really thematic to me.
So I was thinking about this before and thinking the sort of like the crunchy action economy sort of decision-making thing sort of feels a little bit at odds with the theme, right? And then actually I thought about it again, and it's opportunistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
scavenging
is
wolves.
Is theme. Yeah. It is the theme for the wolves.
I think that's a fair point.
Yeah. I mean, wolves are known for their adaptation to terrain, right?
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
I need to do something in in desert. I'm not quite ready for desert, so I'll do something in Rocky Mountains on my way. Now I'm ready for desert.
Mm.
I need to move through the grasslands. Once I've moved through the grasslands, that means that I've now got two forests available, so I can go and hunt that forest territory.
I was thinking about it. And yes, this is absolutely a Euro game. It's very deterministic. It's very clean. It has a wonderful streamlined rule set, which I think is to its benefit. But I'm thinking this could maybe be something like Gangland Warfare as well. Right?
Yeah. You could,
Gangland territory, yeah, and you've got lone gangers or whatever, recruiting it, people. Yeah. Oh, you're scavenging for materials.
Corner thugs turning into sergeants.
Exactly,
or whatever.
Yeah. Maybe. So I can see that point of view, but at the same time, as we've talked about with a couple of games, I love that this theme and the aesthetic and the theme helps make the mechanisms interesting.
Yeah.
Right? Yes, it could be something else, but I like that it's this, and it helps dig into those a little bit more and get you into the game. I think it's a wonderful selection of theme, and an unusual one.
Yeah, I mean, as we've often stated, Pandasaurus seems to have a vague kind of bearing in different zones, but you know, along this kind of thing, they've got they've got Brew, they've got Coming Up Fox Experiment. So this is kind of in one of their alleys. One of their other alleys, obviously, being the recent Skate Summer Wild Style combo in that more colourful action packed split. So yeah, I think it suits very well.
So let's talk about the turn length and the gameplay flow. How do you feel about the flow of the game? Do you have a lot of downtime between turns, for example?
I'm a bit conflicted on this because it can flow quickly or it can go very, very slowly. And I think it depends very heavily on the players.
Yeah,
it can grind to a halt.
It can be absolutely grind defensive, to a halt. Predatory stalking that takes quite a while.
Yeah,
it can be very fast running hunts across the tundra.
Yeah,
more often the latter for my liking. I think it's generally, I mean, any individual's turn, it is two actions, and it will be ultimately limited to what's available to them.
Yeah.
Getting slightly more complicated as the game expands, but genuinely, even in a 5-player count, there was really very little downtime from one turn to the next.
You get plenty of things to think about when it's not your turn because there's a big planning element to the game. But because the board state can change quickly, you might then have to completely rethink what you're going to do. And if suddenly someone catches you off guard and you hadn't really considered what they might do, you might find that actually, you know, the last 5 minutes you just spent planning your turn while everyone else had been taking turns suddenly is scuppered and you hadn't really thought about a plan B.
Mm.
This is true, yeah, and I think it will generally be better suited to not have outright solid plans versus best option and next best option kind of thinking.
I do think, though, that this is more of a strategic game than it is a tactical game. This is much more of a long... Well, much more. I think it's significantly more of a long-term thinking than a turn-by-turn. Yeah. I react to the thing
because
in front of me.
Yeah. Because it's deterministic and you can plan in advance.
You can. And you know what the end scoring is going to be.
You can stay away from players and you can plan for, you know, only going for the, let's say, the end game scoring zones because they're big scorers and you spend the entire game just planning around those.
Or just hunt animals
or
whatever.
It's an option.
Yeah.
It's an option.
But I understand what you mean, though. If someone throws a spanner in the strategy, it might make you just glitch out a little bit.
And it's not necessarily easy to pivot and change your plans.
Because it's not tactical. Right?
Yeah.
It's difficult.
I think we
pivot.
Said after the last play, where none of us really ended up hunting all that much.
Yeah.
Which happens by default if you've got the character pieces in the right place. It's hard to focus on that and then see everyone else doing other things and apparently running away with it. And then going, oh, actually. But if you hunt each of the five available animal types, that's 25 points.
That's a huge score.
That's a
for comparison, what were our final scores last game? 44 to 42.
Yeah.
And then fifth place was down in the low 30s. Yeah. So, you know, if you get 25 points purely from hunting, you're in with a good shout by default. Mm.
It's not a strategy I think anyone has tried yet, where they basically just go small and lean and go for speed and just chase down the pack animals.
Yeah, we'll try and give it a go at some point. I think it's an option. It has to be, right?
Yeah.
Generally, on my first few turns, I'm thinking I want to howl at a wolf, so I've got at least one more
build a den
wolf on the board. I want to build a den, possibly on the same space, so it's safe.
Yeah.
And then see where I can start dominating or exerting territory control.
Mm.
And then run from there. It generally worked so far. I've drawn or won thus far, I believe, which is pretty good for me, considering.
I think, it can grind down a little bit, but I don't think it's unbearable. And I think with experienced players, you can probably wrap this up pretty well.
It's all relative.
For me, I've enjoyed three players the most. It seems to be more likely these days. I think three is a good count for this game.
Yeah.
Five is okay. Four is fine. But three, I think, is great. Real good for this. It gets it all done in a good time. And speaking
75 minutes, no more, no less.
Apparently so. And does this game respect your time, Simon, in terms of setup and teardown?
I reckon so overall. The setup feels a little fiddly because you get so many player pieces. I think it's about 25 wooden pieces to place onto your board in specific places. But that's not actually...
Easily identifiable by where they go, though, isn't it? Like,
no, I've bagged them up per player. So you just chuck your bag at each player and go, there you go, put them on the board.
Yeah, dump them.
And there's no question about, where do I put which bit? It's marked.
It's pretty
on the board.
Obvious, yeah.
It's relatively straightforward, and it's a game that plays in a little over an hour.
Yeah.
Unless people have no idea what they're doing and they get bogged down in decision making, it's going to be that sort of time frame.
Alrighty. Should we move into the final thoughts then about the Wolves?
Yes.
Why not? Let's. okay, Tom, what do you like most about the Wolves?
It's got to be the action economy. I really, really like a deterministic game. I like random bullshit in certain games, but this is exactly, you know, I know exactly what I'm getting with the Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
It's a deterministic game where I can exercise planning muscles and you're rewarded for planning efficiently.
Mm.
Right. And you know, you can catch people out by throwing in a perfectly timed extra action or your wild terrain type tiles, catching people off guard, dominating their stuff, having a big swing. And it's really satisfying when you pull off that sort of, like, you know, two or three action combo, and suddenly someone who thought they'd got a terrain that was locked down has lost control of it.
Simon, anything you'd like specifically?
Yeah, I mean, beyond the immediate aesthetic, which super appealing, there's no denying that. I think I literally saw it and screenshotted it and posted it to you guys immediately.
I'm buying that.
Without even knowing what the game was at that point, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Guys, look, it's amazing. But yeah, that action selection by tile flipping is something unique to this game by my reckoning. I've not seen anything this specific mechanic before. I think it works really well. I think it allows so many options and gives a depth to the game that you might not, as I say, get with a different type of thing, be it a deck of cards with an action on, or
it's sort of like predictable match 2 or match 3 mechanics.
Match
you know three. What's on the other side of the cards. You know what happens after you match.
Yeah, it's almost mathematical without it feeling like you're doing puzzles.
Yeah, it is. It's very puzzly.
And I think it's very clever, and then tied to that, the way that the token pieces come off the board and are your endgame trigger or your scoring point trigger.
It's clever.
And it being multi-staged, it's just such a great combo.
It could have just been a number of rounds, but the fact that the game speeds up and slows down depending on how sort of effectively or efficiently people are doing stuff is really
aggressively, I guess.
Yeah. Aggressively,
aggressively. But I hate to be boring, but I'm going to have to agree. I think that the hook of the game is the tile flipping, and it's the thing that is the most interesting to me. Right, how can I derive the most out of just flipping two tiles? Right, what can I possibly do out of these two actions that's going to be the most effective, impactful thing to get me points, either through upgrading my player board or through area control or through hunting these animals? Right, it's a wonderful little, I suppose, triangle of decision making, and you're trying to get the most amount of things out of just two actions each turn. And it's that tile flipping mechanism which gives you an intrinsic limitation on what you can achieve.
Yeah, that, I was just going to say, that limitation that it instills whilst also giving you huge
options,
variability.
Yes, yes, yes. It's smart. It gives you variability, but also limitation. And within that lies the puzzle. It's a very satisfying one as well when you pull off a couple of things.
Incredibly satisfying, yeah.
It's very, very cool. Is there anything you didn't like about the Wolves?
Nah,
you like the Wolves a lot.
I'm with Kerin. I don't like that there's not a 5-point victory marker.
Just for counting.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's weird that they give you so many 2s, 3s and 4s. I know that they are used for scoring the half points, right, on the territory control.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more than there are opportunities to score.
It does feel like an oddly large number.
You feel like they should be there to help you keep track of your scoring, except there are no ones and there are no fives. Mm. So you like 2s, 3s, and 4s, which just makes the totalling up either manual or slightly awkward.
I don't find the counting the score particularly obvious.
No, I'm just nitpicking. That's not really a thing.
I don't think it's a huge amount. I think it's a marvellous, marvellous game, with the only minor consideration being the potential crunch leading to downtime depending on the player count and the players at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a consideration that if you don't like that, you might not like it, because it can be crunchy. But I think it's a marvellous, marvellous design. Who is this game for?
So it's definitely, as Tom said, it's for people who like being able to almost see ahead to a degree and be able to work out what, not necessarily will, but may be able to happen on their turn.
Planners. It's for planners.
But not strictly. I think you can play this fairly opportunistically, or let's use that word again. Mm. You can see what's available right there, right now, and go, oh, I can do that and then that. I don't think that'll do you badly in a game generally, unless you are with a table of otherwise forward planners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I was playing a 3-player game with Tom and Nick, I think I'd suffer from playing it fast and loose.
Yeah.
But equally, yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity and scope out there for this to be it. As we said, it's an easy enough teach that the scope is pretty wide in my head for who I would introduce this to.
Yeah, I think it's certainly a board gamer's game. But I think it's viable enough to teach people on the edge of the hobby who might be into it, you know, or who are sort of board gamer adjacent.
Yeah, it's not like an entry level board game.
No.
But if people are feeling adventurous and they're not necessarily big board gamers, you can say, let's try this.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah,
this
do you fancy trying something? Yeah, okay, well, does this look like something you've, and for me, obviously,
look at the pretty colours.
The curve appeal won't necessarily be appealing to everyone. It won't necessarily...
The theme is awesome, though.
Immediately,
I think the curve appeal is more likely to grab someone than something like smartphone ink, though, right?
Quite. Yeah. Yes.
Or even something more like typically off-putting, like massive sci-fi or whatever. So, like,
yeah, it feels more approachable than a bunch of other games that we've covered. So.
Yeah. Tom, give us your final thoughts and your final rating.
I'm going to start with a rating. So I'm going to give it a solid 4.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give it a round 4.
Okay.
Spherical 4. Yep, a spherical 4. And final thought is I want to reiterate again, I really like the planning element to it and the fact that it's basically entirely deterministic because that's the sort of game that appeals to me. I like that you can sort of switch between being a bit strategic and being opportunistic or tactical. There are plenty of paths through the way that you play the game with the upgrade tracks to try different strategies. So I think there's plenty of depth and breadth to the game.
Simon?
Yeah, you've pretty much covered it there. Tom, you owe it to yourself to give this a go. If you are interested in game mechanics that you maybe have not seen before or variations thereon, and you want territory control that's not as heavy as something like Scythe, where you really feel like you're in a Cold War, this is much more natural feeling to me.
And slightly less ruthless than something like Rising Sun or Blood Rage.
Oh, God, where, yeah. This is...
Yeah. It's much more...
Fathoms below that stress level in my head.
Yeah.
This feels like... it's levels up from something like Cascadia, which is very pastoral and relaxing. This has a keen edge to it without it feeling like a stressful, ruthless game.
Mm.
As Tom said, there's lots of options in there, and I can't.
Yeah,
I don't know how else to contextualize this without repeating myself. Really, I'm really, really enjoying it. Value for money, spot on for me.
Yeah.
It feels weird to say I want to give anything a 5 because I feel like
give it a 5.
I've genuinely not played it enough to feel like that's valid enough yet, but minimum of a 4. Heading towards a 5 through repeated plays, let's say.
Fair enough.
I enjoy this.
I think it's a fabulous design. A really smart, clever, tight, clean design without any extraneous rule set to guff it up. And it still gives you a wonderful area control game, which I like. I like area control games. It gives you clan upgrades, which is great, and I love that in games too. This is also cool.
Sort of like divergent asymmetry. Asymmetry.
Yeah, asymmetry, gradient asymmetry that grows over the game. It has different paths to win, different ways that you can score, and I like that too. It is deterministic. It's a Euro game with an excellent theme and with lovely pieces at a great price point. I'd give this a 5 out of 5, easy peasy for me, and this would easily be in probably my top 30 favourite games at the moment. I think it's brilliant. I mean, it jumps right into
that. A glowing review.
It's excellent. I think it's an excellent game.
I feel like I haven't been enthusiastic enough after hearing that.
That's me, don't it? Like that.
You're somewhat more bombastic just enthusiastic than I about imagine. Everything.
But especially at £40, I think it's a great crack. Worth a go.
Yeah, as I say, you owe it to yourself to give this a go. Hopefully it's on pretty much wide availability now. I don't think there's stock issues, particularly since release. I know that
since Essen, yeah.
Yeah, it was a very
had like three copies
available. It was a very rare animal at Essen, but super happy to pick this one up when I did.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for listening to Bored Stupid. Subscribe to us for updates and to get future episodes of the show delivered directly to your ear holes via your favourite podcast service. You can find us almost anywhere on the internet by searching for Bored Stupid, spelled B-O-A-R-D. And you can find us and our video content on YouTube. If you like our stuff, give us a 5-star review wherever you can, or a thumbs up, or whatever it is that your content provider gives you the option to do, and interact with us. We love talking to you, specifically you, listener.
Yeah, and you too.
And you, but not you.
Is there like a thumbs up sort of equivalent in something like OnlyFans? Could we do like an OnlyFans?
We could do still an OnlyFans.
I wouldn't know.
You were just since you sort of like broadened that out, and you were like, well, what are the different options in different social media platforms?
Maybe we do an OnlyFans. No one needs to buy that, though. No one's going to.
Strategically positioned board game boxes.
There'd be a furry crossover demand there somewhere.
God, please, no.
If Tom and I don't shave for a couple of weeks, we'll be looking pretty wolfy.
Oh, I don't need that now. Good chin. Thanks for listening, if you still are. We'll catch you again real soon.
You mean real soon?